Yeah, guys, we are 41 minutes into this recording, and we just like to say hello. Welcome, I'm Adara.
I'm Kenzie.
And this is Dead Men Don't Podcast. We come to you from my closet.
Yeah, we're inside Adara's closet now.
Yeah.
Let us know if it feels... It sounds really good right now.
Yeah, it feels so weird, though. I came out of the closet, like, years ago.
Here I am, back in!
I can't believe I'm back in! But you know what? It's nice in here. We got some orange fairy lights. It's all Halloween-y.
Yeah.
All of my partially folded clothes are in here with us.
It's absorbing all the sound. It's good.
Yeah, my nice little graduation dress. It's fine.
Oh, yeah.
Disclosure before we begin. Several things before we begin. One, and probably the most noticeable, Kenzie and I are both very sick. Which falls into one of the reasons why it's been so long since we've done an episode.
Yeah. Many reasons, but we don't need to get into it. We can just...
we can just blow past.
Yeah.
But, like, the footnotes are illness, internship.
Yeah.
Promotion.
Promotion.
School.
School.
And graduation apps.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's pretty much the nutshell.
We're back, yeah.
The only, you know, one thing about this. One word.
Yes. Because I asked her what I can title this audio file, and she said Cabbage Town.
So here's another one for all you Torontonians out there, but this isn't, like, well known. We begin with anonymity. As a citizen of Toronto walks through the city, their interaction with and interpretation of what is around them changes as they move through the grid. Toronto itself is characterized by a hodgepodge of architecture and development that has been in a constant flux since the construction began. Each street, each neighborhood boasts architecture from a vast range of eras, Gothic features meeting the neighboring brutalist buildings, Victorian red brick townhouses shadowed by high rises. Whole regions of the city reflect back a picturesque moment of history from another culture, a fact that this podcast has benefited from on multiple occasions. It means that this city is a city where stories are told. Not just on the screen, though Hollywood benefits the most from Toronto's anonymity, but also amongst ourselves. A city that is curiously apathetic towards its own history in terms of landmarks and street names and architectural identity is a city that must be built around the stories that fill it. For this reason alone, we could probably keep Dead Men Don't Podcast fueled for years on only Toronto-based stories, but we're fickle, so we'll keep venturing out regardless. Even so, the tales whispered in our papers and amongst friends can often be lost in favor of more extravagant or sensational tales of hauntings. We've done it ourselves in the podcast. We've covered the widely known hauntings of, you know, Christie Mansion, and the first one that we did that I'm totally forgetting on the spot.
Coburn Lodge.
Thank you! And the Black Creek Pioneer Village, which is famously haunted and also to the point where it's become a show in and of itself.
Yes.
Despite their existence, there are still some things that, for the most part, fly under the radar of our day-to-day experiences. And I'd like to share with you one of these stories today, and also have a conversation as to why this particular one has fallen into mostly obscurity. And Kenzie.
Yeah.
You are not allowed to get mad at me, okay?
Okay.
At no point in this are you allowed to yell at me.
When have I yelled?
I'm just saying.
I've silently brooded.
Which is great for podcasting.
Yeah, I know.
In August of 1978... a 51-year-old man named Ernest ventured out of his Toronto home in search of his missing cat. Speaking of Bazzi. It was a kitten, one of a litter that he had been nurturing in his home. It had escaped and gotten out, so he went looking for it. Flashlight in hand, Ernest walked the streets of his Cabbage Town neighborhood, and at one point thinking he saw the flash of his cat's tail disappear behind a slab of concrete, headed in the direction of a small opening near his apartment. Crawling down and through the opening in pursuit of what he assumed was his cat, Ernest emerged in a low tunnel he had not known was there before. Marking it as weird but not wholly unusual, I mean, even the newest Toronto residents know that the city has been built and rebuilt so often that it's not surprising to find abandoned tunnels beneath homes or even active subway lines, Ernest began to walk through the tunnel. Not 10 feet in, at the corner of his light, he saw a flash of movement. What his flashlight then lit up was definitely not his cat, and soon sent him fleeing the tunnels in a blind panic. It was a thin, human-like figure, about 3 feet tall, covered in gray fur with slanted orange-red eyes. According to his report, the creature looked at him and hissed the words, "Get out! Get out!" before fleeing in the opposite direction, further down the tunnel. Ernest was more than happy to take the creature's advice. "I wish you'd never come here," Ernest says to Toronto Sun reporter Laurie Goldstein. "If I tell you what I saw, people will think I was drunk or crazy. They'll never believe me." The plea comes after Ernest is approached by the Sun months later, in March of 1979. Having chosen to not report the initial event when it happened, Ernest had instead shared the story with a few close confidants, who then took it to the newspaper. He agreed to discuss the events only if his last name was kept confidential. The exact location where Ernest saw the creature has since been cluttered with broken concrete and years of various city growth, but at the time is reported to have been at the bottom of a narrow passage between the building he lived in on Parliament Street and the building next door. The only way into the tunnel where he saw the creature was to climb down a 15-foot drop on the wrong side of a fire escape that had once served as an exit to the street, but at the time simply led to a narrow lower chamber with walls on four sides. The entrance to the tunnel runs under a slab of concrete in that small chamber, leading to a narrow passage that branches off to the left about 10 feet back. So do you see it? So it's like the alley between my house and the young, just narrower. Uh-huh. At the back of that is a fire escape that would have at one point led like to the surface, but was a 15-foot drop down into just like a square room with four walls. And then there was a hole on one of the walls underneath the concrete slab.
Okay.
And that was the hole that's that he thought. Yes. Yeah, so that's where he thought he saw his cat go in, and he crawled in and then stood up in this tunnel.
Okay.
It was pitch black in there. I saw it with my flashlight. The eyes were orange and red, slanted. It was long and thin, almost like a monkey. 3 feet long, large teeth, weighing maybe 30 pounds with slate gray fur. The report published by Goldstein says that there is a corpse of a cat partially buried in the tunnel, reminding Ernest then of strange noises he had heard, like an animal in pain, that led him to the tunnel. Unfortunately, very likely the corpse of the very cat he was trying to hunt down, presumably the victim of the Smeagol-like creature he saw in the passage. It was during the following winter, before the Sun reported the incident, that the concrete slab fell and blocked the entrance to the tunnel. I believe Ernie saw exactly what he says he did. He was terrified when he came back to the apartment, and he doesn't scare easily. Look, he's been known to have a drink in the past, like most people, and to occasionally tie one on, but he's not a drunk and he wasn't drinking at all that day, says Barbara, Ernest's husband.
Now, can people actually go and find this tunnel still?
I'm getting to that, but no.
Okay. All right.
No. So now it's completely blocked off. And also the exact location has been kind of lost, so there's only the one article published in the Toronto Sun that I pulled most of this information from that references this particular event.
Hmm.
But there's more.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah. You just keep going. Keep going.
I saw it where the tunnel turns. The last I saw, it was heading off into the dark. The passageway seemed to drop down very quickly and go a long way back. Assuming the tunnel led to the sewer system beneath the metro, the Sun reached out to the city's sewer department, who agreed to check the tunnel, as it could be a safety hazard if children were to discover the opening. When asked about it, one of the workers informed the Sun that it was possible that the tunnel led to the sewers, though not probable. They believed it more likely that a separate phenomenon, the result of poor drainage over the years, which caused the erosion underground. And if there's one thing we know about this city, even today it doesn't have good drainage. No. So something like that is definitely possible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you remember the floods we had?
Yep. I wasn't here for them.
Not the summer that just passed, but the previous one when I was at Brookfield still.
The one where the guys almost drowned in the elevator?
Yeah.
Yeah. We had a huge rainstorm the summer before last,
mm-hmm.
and it got so bad that there were, like, two men that were trapped in an elevator, and they almost drowned. Like, the elevator filled almost to the top until they were rescued.
They had to, like, punch a hole in the roof, like, the ceiling of the elevator, just to get cell service to call for rescue.
Yeah.
It was pretty hardcore. So bad. Yeah. There were, like, underneath bridges was flooded so much that cars were, like, underwater. It was really bad. This city has the worst drainage.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's connected to the actual sewer system or not, the thought of an unknown tunnel just building beneath our feet is quite eerie, especially when paired with creepy monkey-like creatures that hiss actual human English words at you. While discussing the incident further, one of the sewer workers told the Sun, "People who work on the surface just don't know what it's like down there. It's a whole different world. Who would have thought a few years ago that people would live in sewers, and yet that's what they found in New York a few years back. Even in Toronto, we've occasionally had to pull mattresses from the chambers beneath the manhole covers where people have been sleeping. I don't know what he saw down there, but I'll tell you one thing. If we could get in there, I sure as hell wouldn't want to go down alone."
Yeah, me either.
All that being said, the story itself would appear to be no more than an isolated curiosity were it not for the multitude of alleged events to follow. Although the creature was never seen again, as far as we know, there are multiple separate reports. Jesus Christ. There are multiple separate reports of other strange things happening in that very area. Unexplained magnetic effects have been observed around the corner of Girard and Church, and that intersection has a higher accident rate than anywhere else in Toronto. One theory is that there is an abandoned underground city that is currently utilizing powerful magnetic fields, which cause issues at surface level in the homes and on the street, including bizarre equipment failures and those car accidents. I can tell from the look on Kenzie's face she knows where I'm going. But I'll agree with you when you scoff at the idea of an active underground city inhabited by pale, hissing creatures that run about with electronic devices beneath Toronto. I mean, we already know the path exists. And it's also all of that. However, the thought of another one beneath the path is simply absurd. Until you consider aliens.
Okay, now before we dive into that topic, I should just briefly say that the path is an underground section in Toronto that has stores.
It's an underground city.
Yeah, basically you can walk around all downtown down there.
But it's not underneath Girard and Church. So it's like all the entertainment.
Yeah, it's like the entertainment district.
The financial district.
Yeah.
Which is where I work.
Yeah, financial district. It's like, it's long pathways that connect buildings and malls and everything like that.
And there's no maps?
Yeah, there's one map on Google Maps that doesn't show you anything.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work.
Yeah,
it's so very easy hard to get lost down there. So maybe this creature was just someone who got lost. Although I don't think the path existed at this time.
I mean, maybe the place near Holt looks pretty dated. The one with the brass rails and
this
the...
This is true.
Yeah. I'd say at least 80s.
Anyway, did you know there's an alien base underneath it, like Ontario?
Yeah.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you just going with me?
I'm just going with you.
Cool. The supposed alien hideout is reportedly the source of many a strange floating light over the surface of Lake Ontario. These orange-colored spheres have been seen coming out of / diving into Lake Ontario. Yes, like the lights, Kenzie. Good job! Kenzie, when I said orange-colored spheres, Kenzie slowly pointed at the fairy lights that we have in their setup right now.
Yeah.
They've been seen coming out of / diving into Lake Ontario between Oakville and Toronto, but are connected possibly to the Lakeview hydroelectric plant, as many of them have been seen headed in that direction. Now, this claim is unusual only because we're hearing about it in our very own Lake Ontario. Reports of UFO-like activity around power plants are not unusual around the world, and in fact, a number of reported UFO and alien sightings increased significantly in areas where power plants were originally built and active. The fact that Toronto already has one alleged alien base beneath its very own shore waters leads me to a particular theory about this Cabbage Town scenario, and that is where my notes end. So we're just gonna discuss. So my theory is that this entrance that Ernest found next to his Cabbage Town home in the 1978, that was reported in 1979, is, in fact, the entrance to an underground alien base that is beneath our city. So there have also been reports of people walking by or through that area and losing time. Mm-hmm. Kenzie.
I think I've heard of that.
Yeah. Yeah. So people, like, you'll walk by. It's like, so... How do I describe this? I think people know what I'm talking about when I say losing time, but for those of you who don't understand, just imagine you're walking down the street and you check your watch and it's 9:05 p.m. And then you keep walking and you check your watch again and you've lost time. Your watch has frozen, but there's a clock somewhere near you that says a completely different time, like 9:30 or something like that.
Yeah.
So you've literally lost time between one step and the next for absolutely no reason. So that's a phenomenon that has happened to a lot of people. Like, there's a story, I can't remember their names, it was somewhere in the States where they were driving and at one point they noticed that their clocks had stopped. And then by the time their clocks started again, it had only been what they thought was 5 minutes, but it was actually like hours of time had passed. And that was in an area of heightened UFO activity. So that's like an abduction story related to like they went through hypnosis and were like, they recalled events that happened to them in that lost time period. But there have been reports of that same type of occurrence happening around where this guy lost his cat and saw the creature, which happens when aliens or, you know, other beings, like it happens with the Greys a lot. We haven't gotten into alien terminology really on this podcast, and I won't get into it now. Just go look up the Greys and you'll know what I'm talking about.
The Greys are the guys with the big heads and the black eyes, right?
Yeah, they're Greys, but they're like the main, like they're the favorite of alien conspirators. And they're basically like, whenever anybody talks about alien visits or alien abductions, they're mostly referring to the Greys, quotes, heavy quotation marks, the Greys, because they're like presumably the most active. But I personally think it's more probable that the Greys are just one subsect, like even like if you want to say race, species or whatever of alien that has come to Earth, and it's way, way, way more likely that there are others. Anyway, here's the thing. There's a theory of consciousness that says that our brains, and this is a fact, our brains are wired to forget things that they can't handle. So if you go through a traumatic event, your brain's
forgetting everything all the time.
Your brain is just going to go, fuck this, we're going to make up a happier story so that you can physically and mentally move on from the events that happened. I'm not talking as an expert on this, but presumably based on what I know about this, that's why things like PTSD and all of that is so bad, because you, like, your brain literally can't handle it. And it's, like, breaking down. But for the most part, if you see something, like, if you're just, like, a passerby to something horrible that happened, you're going to be like, okay, we're forgetting that.
Yeah.
And it's going to be wiped out. There's another theory that says, like, you know the thing about dreams and how you only dream about people and faces that you've seen? Like, you can't conjure up a new face in your dreams. So when you see someone, if there's another human being in your dreams, it either has the face of someone that you know or even just a stranger that you pass on the street.
Yeah.
It's always going to be something that you've actually seen that your brain can actually conjure up and build. So this theory of consciousness says that there is absolutely nothing you can dream that you haven't seen before. Meaning if you've ever dreamed of any sort of monster or creature or anything like that, it's something that you have physically seen with your own eyes, but your brain has decided is too much for you to handle and has just erased the memory. But when you're dreaming about it, that's your brain going like, hey,
right,
it's firing.
Remember, it's here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So all those things fire. So if you dream about a monster, that's a monster that you've actually seen. Whether our concept of what a gray looks like is based on what the movies or illustrations have depicted, or if these movies and illustrations depict what a gray looks like because that's what we've seen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's one of those, what came first, the chicken or the egg? So on that theory, things like this creature that Ernest saw, there's other theories that say things like, what is it? It's a cryptid and I cannot remember what it is. Not the New Jersey Devil.
Chupacabra,
thank you. Are you remembering that from the cryptids episode? Because I'm probably brought
I've
it
just
up.
Like always known about it because I read books on it when I was younger.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay, well, there's a theory with the chupacabra that the chupacabra was actually a military experiment gone wrong. And there's multiples of them out there where they were trying to breed basically these monster army dogs that they could use in battle, but it went haywire and now they just like roam free. So things like this creature could be the result of something similar, whether the description and the artist's rendition, which was approved by Ernest, doesn't to me look or sound like an alien, but it does sound like some sort of experiments gone wrong. It reminds me a lot of, if you've seen the movie The Descent, have you? Okay. You should not watch that movie.
You think it'll freak me out?
It freaked me out.
Okay, well, if it freaked you out, it's gonna freak me out.
But it's basically like it's the Smeagol effect, you know? But it reminds me of something like that, where it's humanoid, but it's also very animalistic, and it can speak, but I don't think... Like, who knows? Who knows? But I feel like that kind of sighting is more in line with cryptids than it is with aliens. But then there's that gray line between aliens and cryptids as well. It's really difficult not to cross. But yeah, do you have any questions about Toronto's alleged alien underground city?
So only one man saw this guy.
Yes, it's only one man has seen this creature.
So they filled the tunnel in.
They didn't fill it in. The entrance was blocked.
That's interesting.
It is very interesting because it was blocked after he saw the creature, which to me says that whatever's living down there was like, oh,
or,
fuck.
Or,
and this gets into, I don't know if this is what you were going to get to, but this gets into one of my theories as to why it's not widely discussed, is because we saw this with Shake Harbor. If it is something alien, or if it is something cryptid that's related to military, or anything that's related to government at all, that is something that they would very, very, very quickly
hush
up.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then it makes sense that there's no other stories.
It's feasible. And did he always just testament that what he saw was fact?
Yeah. He never changed, and he also didn't go to the press himself. The press came to him. Because he told, family members and, people that he thought wouldn't tell anybody, and then they told the press, and the press came to him, and he was like, all right, I'll tell you the story, but...
Yeah.
You can't tell anybody my last name. I'm in the phone book. I don't want weirdos calling me. He didn't want to be involved in it at all.
Which makes it more credible, because normally people want to go to the press and be like, my name is this, this, and this, and I saw this, and you can call me and text me, and I'm going to make a new website.
I was abducted by aliens.
Yeah.
And they did some freaky butt stuff.
Yeah. Probed me.
You want to hear my story? And he was very reluctant. Even, in the conversation, he was like, I wish you hadn't come.
Right, because it's at this point, it's you're kind of, your reputation is kind of on the line. Exactly. Depending on what you do is your career or whatever, they're going to hear that you thought you saw and a monkey man underground.
I feel like even for me, there's things that I've seen that I'm like, I don't really want to tell anybody that I've seen that or I've experienced that, because it just doesn't make sense in the world that we live in. So why would I share it?
Right.
You know?
You tell people when you know that they will understand and will either had that experience too or won't judge you for it because they believe in that world as well.
Yeah. I feel like if I had been in his position and I had seen that creature and it actually happened, I think I would automatically assume either A, I was having a breakdown and hallucinating, or I had just misinterpreted something like a raccoon or something like that, you know, an animal that I wasn't expecting to see in a dark tunnel on the edge of my light.
Yeah.
And then it hissed at me and I thought I heard words, you know?
Yeah. That's different though. It's seeing something that flash by you and something, you seeing the eyes and hearing it say, get out.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's different just seeing it, because then you can be like, could have been a cat, could have been a raccoon, could have been anything.
Yeah, if he had just seen something flash by the edge of his light, then it literally could have been anything. But he had a full description of what it looked like. But I think we might have a Toronto cryptid on our hands.
It's interesting that it hasn't been talked about more widely.
I think the reason is because it's a singular event. Nobody wants to talk about this one guy that saw this creepy thing. It's a good, monster story if you're, it's a good campfire story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that story about Ernest going down to the tunnel and seeing something that was the blah, 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 blah. It's not backed up by other people seeing the same thing. But it is backed up by weird magnetic fields that have come out of the same area.
Well, I think from all this, I gotta say I believe him. Even though I don't know the guy.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's still a Torontonian.
He's probably not. I wouldn't say he's probably not alive, but I think I'd say he was. Well, no, wait. No, he's not alive. He was 51.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was 40 years ago.
R.I.P.
Ernest.
Oh,
he might be.
Still, he might be.
He might be 95.
Yeah. Well, R.I.P. Ernest, just in case.
Yeah.
Respect to you. Oh, but yeah, that's all I have. I thought just something nice and kind of sensational and creepy. Do you want to go Wendigo hunting with me?
Cricket. Cricket.
Okay, fine. Do you want to go camping with me?
Yeah.
Great. Kenzie just agreed to go Wendigo hunting with me.
I'll go if it's daylight, but we'll go Wendigo hunting during the day and then sleep at night. How's that?
But that's the point. The Wendigos come to you.
I don't want them to come to me.
Just no,
I want to close my eyes and go to sleep, and then they'll be like, well, she's not awake, so we just guess we can't bother.
Do you know the Wendigo's whole thing is that they make you hallucinate to the point that you think you're going insane? So when you're out in the woods and you feel like you're walking in circles, Wendigos, man.
Yeah, that's a good note to leave this Toronto cryptid episode on. Wendigos, man. They really be that way.
Yep. Dead Men Don't Podcast is hosted by us, Adara and Kenzie. Original music has been provided by Ethan Reed. Find us on social media at Dead Men Don't Pod on Twitter, at Dead Men Don't Podcast on Instagram, Dead Men Don't Podcast on Facebook, and email us at deadmendontpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow our composer, Ethan, on Instagram at Ethan A. Reed. Find all of these links and more in the description.
And if you enjoy listening to us scream about ghosts
and aliens
and bees, please rate and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app. It helps us produce more shows just like this, and we appreciate each and every one of you. Thanks, and stay spooky.